This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
City officials and community members are developing a master plan for the redevelopment of properties owned and managed by the Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority. CRHA owns 40 acres of land, spread out over 11 sites in 7 city neighborhoods. The Charlottesville Planning Commission heard details of the plan at their work session on May 25, 2010. Charlottesville Tomorrow's recording begins with Amy Kilroy, the CRHA's Director of Redevelopment.
A copy of the PowerPoint in its entirety for you to follow along with if you'd like. First of all, thanks for having us. I don't know if any of you know, Randy Bickers, our executive director, is here with us as well. We're very happy to be here this evening and thankful that you guys are interested in what we're talking about and working on to do the presentation to you tonight. A little bit about what we're going to be talking about tonight. Before I get into sort of where we're going, I want to make sure that all the commissioners are comfortable with sort of where the Housing Authority is right now and how the process that we've spent the past 2 years on came to be. I'll do a quick review of some terminology and some acronyms that we tend to throw around a lot in our HUD world. Give you an overview of the process so far, talk about our resident Bill of Rights, and then we'll get into the design scenarios that we've seen so far from the consultant team, talk a little bit about what our redevelopment committee has been up to, and that is our equivalent of the Planning Commission. They are an advisory body to our full board, so they act very similar to how the Planning Commission does in City Council. Plan for resident services, in addition to physical changes to the buildings, we're looking at making improvements to services provided on-site and connecting our residents better to services in the community. And then just a little brief word about what next steps in future planning look like for us. So just to give you a little bit of a background on who we are and where we are within the city, the Housing Authority currently owns 40 acres of land. We have 11 public housing sites right now, 7 are multifamily, and we have 4 single-family houses. We also have 1 vacant parcel of land over on Levy Avenue, which is a parking lot currently used by the city across from Spudnuts right now. We have property in 7 of your city's neighborhoods and 5 elementary school districts for a total of 376 units of public housing right now. A little bit of information about our residents that we have living with us. Average income, you see, is just over $11,000 a year. Average rent that we bring in is $258 a month. That's regardless of whether you live in a one-bedroom or a five-bedroom. Rent is calculated solely on 30% of whatever income the family has coming into the house each month. And then the minimum rent to live with us is $25 a month. There's a rumor out on the street that anybody can live with the Housing Authority for free, and that is not, in fact, true. Everybody pays something to live with us. Our building stock right now is between 30 and 45 years old, so we've definitely passed at least one life cycle on many of our buildings, if not closing in on 2. And 4 of our 7 multifamily sites currently have community centers. Quick run through some definitions. I think for the Planning Commission, many of these are going to be familiar to you already. The master plan is our document that we're working on right now with our consultant team to sort of queue up what we hope to accomplish through redevelopment on all 12 of our sites. WRT is the acronym for Wallace, Roberts, and Todd. That is a consultant team we've been working with for the past year out of Philadelphia. Mixed use and mixed income, I'm sure you're familiar with through zoning. ACC unit is another HUD technical term for public housing unit. They're used.
Can I sponsor there?
Sure.
How do you define mixed income? What does it mean?
Mixed income for us right now, all of our sites are strictly public housing. And so after redevelopment's over, we'd like to have a mixture of public housing residents, either Section 8 or tax credit, affordable rental units, market rate units, and homeownership units all within the same site.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, we don't have an upper cap on what mixed income is for us right now. We just know that we don't want all public housing anymore. Thank you for the question, though. ACC is a public housing unit. Section 8 vouchers, that's the other program that the Housing Authority currently runs. Close to 300 Section 8 vouchers, I believe, out in the community right now. redevelopment and rehab with infill. Those are the two options you'll hear about as we go through what's in the master plan right now. Redevelopment, for our intents and purposes, means demolition of what's on site and a complete rebuild from scratch. And rehab with infill would mean keeping the units that we have and adding additional ones to those sites. LIHTC is the acronym for the low-income housing tax credits. That's one of the funding sources we're looking at to help us with redevelopment, as is HOPE 6 at the top of the second column. It's a federal funding source typically used for public housing redevelopment in the past. Under the Obama administration, there's some chance that that program is going to go away and morph into a new Choice Neighborhoods program, so we're trying to keep an eye on what that funding stream is going to do. AMI is area median income, density and DUA, dwelling units per acre. I know you guys are very familiar with. Relocation is the federal process that we'll have to go through when we move families temporarily out of their homes while we do construction, and then we'll relocate them back to their homes when we're done. Market rate units, just no sort of subsidy in their rent or homeownership. HUD is housing and urban development, where we get our money from. Relocation vouchers are separate from the Section 8 vouchers, and that's a tool that we can use during relocation to help families find an apartment to live in temporarily. And then when they move back into public housing at the end, those vouchers will be used to help other families relocate. But they're separate. It's a separate pot of vouchers from our existing stock. And then one-for-one replacement is a term you'll hear a lot tonight. And that is sort of the big overarching principle for us in redevelopment, in that we have 376 public housing units now. When we're finished, we'll have at least 376 public housing units. One thing we've noticed with other housing authorities that we've been researching is that they'll bring back the same number of units when they're finished with redevelopment, but maybe half of them will be public housing. And so in a lot of other housing authorities, residents are being permanently displaced through redevelopment, and in Charlottesville, we've committed to not doing that on the front end.
What's your... Do you have a sense of the target relocation period? How long?
12 months.
And when you transition to make
best case, that's very aggressive,
best
you realize. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Will you manage the mixed income properties, or will you sell that out to a management group?
Chances are it'll be a combination of the two. We haven't gotten to that level of detail yet, though. That's something else that we're looking into. Quick overview of the process so far. The Housing Authority has three primary objectives for why we're doing redevelopment. The first one is, as I said, our buildings are fairly old, and we'd like to just improve the general quality of the neighborhoods for the residents that we have living with us right now. The second one is that our units are, because they're very old, are very inefficient and not a good use of our resources right now. So we'd like to make them all green and very energy efficient, reduce our energy costs both as an agency and for the residents that live with us themselves. And then the third one is that we need to become more financially sustainable as an agency. Through the past couple presidential administrations, HUD's funding has gone up and down, and housing authorities have felt the results of that. And so we'd like for a lot of our properties to become income generating as a result of redevelopment, and that will help us become less reliant on the HUD funding as we go forward. So we embarked on this process 2 years ago, which is hard to believe. And one of the first things that we did was Housing Authority staff from Legal Aid Justice Center and from our Public Housing Association of Residents got together and said, you know, we're excited about redevelopment, we're excited about what it has to offer, we're also terrified because we've heard a lot of the horror stories that other housing authorities have been through and what their residents have been through as a result of redevelopment. So what we want to do is we want to start off on the right foot, be very proactive, and we want to put in place a series of guiding principles that will protect us as an agency, but more importantly, it'll protect the families that currently live with us right now. And so that document is called the Resident Bill of Rights. It was in a packet that Missy sent out to you last week. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on the principles in it, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. The gist of it is, you know, all the families that live with us now will be invited to return after redevelopment. Nobody will become homeless as a result of the process. We will be building similar-sized units in terms of number of bedrooms so that families' needs will continue to be met after redevelopment. And then towards the bottom, you get into the less housing-focused, where, you know, increasing access to jobs and transportation and community resources and trying to be very holistic in strengthening the communities that we have now and better integrating them into the surrounding neighborhoods instead of them being islands within larger city neighborhoods like they are now.
Is this Bill of Rights idea something that the agency came up with itself or something that has grown in popularity with other organizations?
We are pretty much on the front end of having a Bill of Rights. Our legal aid, Justice Center, does work with the Richmond Housing Authority as well, so they were writing theirs at the same time we were writing ours, but as far as we know, there aren't very many, if at all, other housing authorities that have this kind of document in place. It was adopted unanimously by our board and by Mayor Norris and City Council, I think 18 months ago now. So through the past 18 months of discussion, we're happy to say that it's still 100% intact. It's been challenging at times to keep 100% intact, but we're happy to say that so far so good, we're still there. And that really steered the rest of the process for us since then in terms of, you know, getting residents involved in a meaningful way and not just saying that that was something that we were going to do. And last summer, we set up a whole separate track of meetings and activities for the youth of our public housing. About half the residents that we have living with us right now are under the age of 18. So we have a huge youth and young adult population that we wanted to make sure had the opportunity to contribute to the changes that were coming as well.
Sorry to be honest, can I ask, what's the legal status of the Resident Bill of Rights? Is it really a document with legal standing that you can be held accountable for?
It is, and as much as our board has adopted it as policy, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure it can be amended in the future if it needed to be. Any changes that came to the Bill of Rights would not happen without running it through the residents and through our resident association and legal aid first, though. So mm-hmm. It was really a tri-party agreement when it was written. So mm-hmm. Any changes would be implemented as
such. I guess my question is, it does seem like a wonderful thing to do to build trust with residents, and I would imagine that the savvier resident would want to know, if this isn't upheld, do I have legal recourse, because you legally said you were going to do it, and that's kind of my question, is whether it has that kind of strength or not.
I don't think it has legal standing, but it has more, I would say, political weight. We'd have a lot of explaining to do if we what's in here. But, I mean, there have been discussions as we've gone on, because right from the start, the WRT said it's going to be really difficult to do what you want to do within your parameters and mix incomes and sort of throwing everything into the pot with one-for-one replacement. So as we've gone through this and some of those difficulties have started bubbling up, you know, it's been sort of, it's never really been brought back on the table that we change it, but there have been discussions about, okay, is it time to start looking at this Resident Bill of Rights? One of the things, the 12-month relocation, is that very easily could change just because of reality. That's the target, as we said.
So to describe this kind of common vision that everyone's agreed is the common vision.
Yeah. The one-for-one replacement, I think, that's the big thing that sits in this document, and that would be the one thing. Again, I don't think there would be any legal recourse that anybody could take against us if we didn't do it, but it would be it would have significant impact if we didn't do that.
Thank you. Thanks for tolerating my legalistic questions.
So the good news for us is that housing authorities across the country have been doing redevelopment in the past few years, so we've had a lot of research base to draw upon. The not necessarily bad news, but the more challenging news is that there isn't one right way to do it. So we've sort of been figuring out from the research that we've been doing and through the work in the past 18 months with the consultants sort of what the best way for Charlottesville to do it is. And as such, we set up our process in four phases. What do we have now? What do we want? What are our options? And how's it going to happen? So right now we are wrapping up phase four in the how's it going to happen sort of negotiation between a number of options that the board has seen type of thing. That being said, just to talk a little bit about the consultant scenarios before we get into them, all of our families have been asked to consider changes to their neighborhoods. So this is not intended to any way target any neighborhoods or only make changes. Everybody will see improvements as a result of redevelopment. All the scenarios we're going to show you this evening are still in draft form. We have a series of drawings from the draft master plan, which some of you saw in December at our round of community meetings. And then we have another round of higher density drawings from the consultant within the past 2 weeks or so that are in here as well. The draft plan drawings that are in here are in the draft because they've received the most support so far from the residents and from the community meetings that we've held. We did a few dot exercises. We did a few other ways of gathering input. And what's in the draft plan was the favorites by far of what we had seen so far. And then we asked for the additional drawings on top of that. So comments and feedback are still coming in. Any comments that this body has to offer either tonight or later will certainly be appreciated. And as many of them as possible will incorporate into the final plan. Now what I'd like to do is just spend a few minutes walking through our neighborhoods with you. This is where the photos that I passed out will be handy for those of you who are a little bit less familiar with some of our sites. And then the photos in the packet will correspond in order to how they go through in the PowerPoint as well. The first site is our Levy Avenue site. So you have Avon Street, sort of down to the lower, I'm trying to point over, that would be helpful. But Spud Nuts is going to be down to your lower right-hand side, headed towards the Belmont Bridge, towards the top of the slide and the amphitheater. We own the red rectangle in the back of that right now, and as I mentioned, that's a city parking lot. And we're in negotiations to buy the gas station on the corner that's in the yellow rectangle. So if all goes well and that comes through, we'll have just over an acre on that site. Looking at anywhere between, I'd say, 35 and 60 units with some commercial and office space on this site right now. What you're seeing in the draft is, I think, 36 units, and everybody decided that was not dense enough for where this site was located, so we'll be looking at changing this scheme as we move forward with the process. But right now, that was, compared to the other three or four options that the community saw, this was the favorite because it wasn't one large brick, or excuse me, one large block building dropped on the site. So it was trying to respond to what was going on Hinton Avenue behind it. Next, we have Crescent Halls, which is our high-rise building on Monticello Avenue across from the new ACAC building. We have 105 families in Crescent Halls right now, all one- and two-bedroom units, and all of our residents in this building are either elderly and or disabled. So some changes we'd be looking to make in this building would be a rehab, first of all. As far as we know, we're going to keep Crescent Halls intact. Looking at adding some more community center space and potentially light commercial space on the Monticello Avenue side, that orange and red sections, because right now there's just a vacant hillside there that is very underutilized. We'd be looking to green the entire building, make the units fully ADA accessible, because they are not right now. And then giving it just a gut rehab in terms of the HVAC system. Windows are going in now. We're looking to put a green roof on and that type of thing.
Are you looking to do market rate in this building?
This building will stay entirely public housing when we're done.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. We actually have had some preliminary discussions with Java. Java is very interested in exploring the possibility of making a couple of floors assisted living. Because right now it doesn't have that component. So far, I've said no, that's not possible to do sort of a mix within this building. I'm not sure exactly in their system why, but if that were to happen, there would be the potential that some of those assisted living rooms or, you know, that would be opened up. That could be opened up.
So it's HUD rules that are restricting your ability to put any market rate units in. This.
Because I think what their problem is that I haven't really talked at length about this with HUD, but it's almost like they won't allow us to sort of divide the building up into, you know, this is still public housing, this is, you'd have to sort of, I think from an ownership standpoint, they have a problem with how it's being funded, and so they, I think other places have explored this possibility, and so far no one's found a way. It seems like a natural fit for us.
Yeah.
And it will allow us to allow some of our residents to age in place and not be moved out. And actually, we have tremendous challenge right now with people that really should have assisted living, and we can't find placements for them. And so they're stuck in the building where we don't have services. But so far, we're hitting a brick wall with that. But that would be the one possibility of some different levels of income being in that building.
Thank you.
What's the vision for the Avon and Levy? I know you haven't acquired it yet, and I just saw some press about it the other day. Would that be a combination of market rate?
Yes. That would have public housing, tax credit units, and market rate units on it, as well as the commercial space.
And really, why we saw that the Avon is being such a good acquisition for us, one, to control what went on there, but also to explore commercial possibilities. PHAs who are working with us to look at that acquisition. Evidently, this is an enterprise tax credit, or it's a hot zone within the city for a different kind of
new market
tax credit. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So that's also a possibility of what we could do there. So we haven't really when WRT did their drawings, as you see that and actually as of today, it's still not under our it's not ours yet. So they haven't really sort of looked at the site as a whole, including that Avon frontage, and sort of come up with some different concepts of what we could do there.
I attended some of the meetings, and I know there was conversation about what should be the character of Levy Avenue, and, mm-hmm. and there were also conversations about not concentrating so many units of public housing. So I was a little surprised with Garrett Street development already being there as public housing, that it would be moving up to Avon Street in a commercial corridor. Can you inform us a little bit about your thinking of that, or was it just to take advantage of an enterprise tax credit zone?
When they first looked at this, and I think in sort of WRT's concept, especially in trying to tier the Bill of Rights, they were using this site to do relocation. They were looking at this as a really good relocation resource. And so in their original, I think it's actually in the draft, these are all public housing units. And based on comments that we heard at a lot of different meetings, we sort of said, okay, we don't want to do that. That's probably not going to happen there. There's not enough units, number one, from a density standpoint, and we don't want all public housing there. What they were envisioning were these would be sort of elderly, disabled units. So it wouldn't be family units per se, like at some of our other sites. And also that would help. Their vision for Crescent Hall is to become more of an elderly-only building, and the non-elderly disabled they're going to try to move out of that building and onto different sites. And they were using this site specifically to do a lot of that. Based on a lot of comments that we heard, though, I think that all goes back to the drawing board. This site is probably the one that's going to change the most. You'll see some different density options later, but this one will change a lot in the kind of final. I can't say the final plan, because we're almost done with our contract with WRT, but when we throw Avon into the mix, this site will look much different than...
Before you see it as a site plan, it will look very different than what it does now.
Yeah.
It has a lot of slope on it.
It changes to
the
amount of slope. Mm-hmm.
The big parking lot would be mm-hmm. pulled off of it.
Mm-hmm. It's also in the Clark School District, which is one of the school districts that Dr. Adkins brought to our attention is having a high concentration of students on free and reduced lunch. So they're very interested to see sort of what the income mix looks like on this site as well in terms of number of children that could be added potentially to the Clark School as a result of this. So we're trying to keep all of those pieces in the mix when being sensitive to figure out what the final plan is for the academy.
Our hope, I think, at least some of the talk has been that whatever public housing units that we put here are still either one bedroom or those same type of units for disabled, non-elderly who would not probably have kids in most cases, because we're really trying to not add any more public housing children to this school district. We've heard a lot of pressure because we have is it just one other site? I get confused where all the elementary schools go, but we have another site that already goes to Clark that we're adding potentially more at least low-income tax credit units. And when we get to this concept of income mixing, we're hearing that for school purposes, at least, that's not enough. To go to that next level up is not enough income mixing to sort of get to what they want to see. because they're still on for your reduced lunch. So, you know, we've got to decide exactly what we do with this, but we're trying not to add a bunch more low-income kids.
I mean, I know it's not your mission, because your mission is housing, but I would just like to say at this point that this is a really critical gateway approach to downtown and to the city. And so it's a site that demands a higher level of design sensitivity, probably.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why we went after that Avon. We sort of talked to the city, and it seemed like a good thing to have under either our control or the city's control, and, you know, so that we could figure out what we want to do with that, to do exactly
what because it's highly visible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Two things. One is we should talk offline about new market tax credits. I know more than I want to know.
Okay.
There's some pratfalls. Two is, has WRT seen any of the existing multiple plans that were drawn as part of
this?
So they've seen the Stone King Von Storch plan that incorporates the parcel.
The site?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are a number of, my recollection is there are a number of designs that that imagined incorporating that block into the neighborhood that could perhaps begin to address some of Jenny's concerns that it not be... You know, that it be designed well. I recall seeing a few different designs that have some sort of internal circulation that allowed you to sort of extend the streetscape all the way up Levy, and kind of tuck it around Avon that gives you an opportunity to extend mixed use all the way down Levy.
Mm-hmm.
So they have seen. That's great.
What about the demise of the Charlottesville Lumber and Better Livings facility? I mean, that it seems that now that Avon corner and the big flat piece of mud at this point will also have anybody
looks like
approach
it exceeded, though, the other
day. Yeah, it's
just progressing.
Just in the last couple of days.
Yeah. The two together, well, all three, and is the corner parcel, is it for sale right now? Is the other one, the big the next one over behind where the Better Living was? I think it's, I'm not sure if it's for sale. Mm-hmm. Where the parking lot shows now.
That parking?
Yeah.
Over on the other?
Is it?
I don't know.
Across the street?
It is, yeah.
Thank you.
Here's my
chair. We haven't talked to them yet, but Amy and I have talked a lot about, you know, is there some way to do something creative and, you know, between the two sides of the street to incorporate. I mean, I would hope that we'd be able to do something in a collaborative way to with design and, you know, rolling our site, you know, sort of seamlessly into whatever goes across the street. I don't know where they are with their concepts or ideas.
We're sort of keeping track just through the planners to see when stuff starts to come in for them to start talking with them. Yeah, we knew that it came down with no intentions or no future steps.
At that point.
So we may catch them.
We might catch them, yeah.
This office looked at the Avon Street property in an earlier version of an RFP that was done through the Housing Authority. And what we found was that the Walker's Auto property was much restricted on its own development standing alone, but you could really open it up if you had yours together with it.
Mm-hmm.
As a standalone on the corner, you can't park it. So I think it just barely falls out. Parking exempt is on the other side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just barely on the other side of the parking, and then that just kills it for being able to really make it dense.
Has there been any conversation about opening up the alley all the way behind it?
I know that was in one of the concepts, too.
One of the earlier concepts? Mm-hmm. Probably a couple of the earlier concepts.
Mm-hmm. Put meals on it.
That had been read.
Because there were houses, I know, on the sort of... directions, but I say the back
side.
Yeah, where there's no houses right now, one of the concepts, those were all sort of single family homes in one of the drawings I know, with the alley opened up behind it. So, I think that the actual drawings that incorporated the Avon, I don't know that that may have been before my time. I'm not sure I've seen too many of those.
Oh, the other RFP?
Yeah.
It was 2005, I think.
I've seen some since then, but it was just our site.
You must have them in your archives.
We have them.
Yes. And WRT has gotten copies of those as well.
Yeah.
Everybody good with Levy? Mm-hmm. Crescent Halls? Anyone?
Well, I have a question about the additions on Monticello Avenue. Is there any idea how many stories they would be, given the height of the ACAC across the street?
I don't think we've talked about
it. Program-wise, it just looks like community rooms.
The cast keep the same shadow as the tower.
In this concept, it's only I think it's two stories, because it basically right now to get into Crescent Halls you have to come around the building. There is no there's an emergency exit that faces Monticello, but there's what they're trying to do is open up the building to Monticello. And it was basically coming out of the second story. And so there would be, you know, I think it is community space or offices there and then down to the first floor underneath that. But I don't think they've, you know, at least in these drawings, they haven't talked about going higher than that.
What does that say? Is it existing what?
Causeway, breezeway.
The breezeway?
Yeah,
we have a breezeway.
That's the passage at the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, so our rental office right now sits on the lower half of, we're on to the right side of that breezeway, and then the residents are to the left.
What's the zone in that part of Monticello? Is it a mixed-use zone? Would we have a minimum requirement on that?
That's
that close to the streets?
We're R3 right now.
R3?
Okay. Crescent Halls?
Yeah.
Ready to go?
Yeah.
Next one is West Haven. And West Haven, we're going to show you two different drawings. The first one in your packet is existing conditions. We have 126 families on close to 10 acres at West Haven right now. This first option is what is currently in the draft, and that has 180 families at West Haven. A mixture of public housing, tax credit, and market rate units. Also, towards the lower half of the screen, in that yellow dotted box, adds in some potential acquisition of parcels that front on Main Street. There's a vacant parking lot there now, and there's two auto places to the left of it, to the west of it. And we haven't had any conversations recently with the owners of any of those parcels, so this is all hypothetical, but ideally, in our best-case scenario, what we'd like to do would be to punch through from Hardy Drive up to Main Street, bring another connection into the neighborhood to better integrate West Haven with the surrounding 10th and Page neighborhood, because it's very much an enclave right now within 10th and Page.
Is this where the parking lot is right now?
Yeah. Further to the right, where the yellow
Where the yellow building is.
Yeah, it's that whole... can you see the sort of the lightly dotted yellow lines around? Uh-huh. It's that whole part. Are the
I'm too close. I can't
the
do that.
Parcels that are on Main Street.
Yeah.
And the purple building on Main Street is where the... Is there a hair salon there now?
Republic Plaza or something?
Republic Plaza is the next building to the left with the greenish color roof.
At the top, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is there a structure where the purple building is?
Where is it? There's a structure that's going to be close to where the purple building is. It's not the U-Haul facility, but there's a tire.
It's like an auto tire in the parking lot.
It's like an office. It's set back from
all the way back.
Yeah.
And then there's parking in front of it.
It's almost like a garage.
And then there's another sort of auto repair. There's another auto repair business to the further west of it with parking in front of it as well. Before you get to Republic Plaza.
But there's nothing at the street.
No.
In that entire yellow dotted area.
It's just
all
parking.
It's all that parking lot area.
Mm-hmm.
The orange is the old Safeway. Is that the old grocery?
Which orange is behind the purple?
That's too far.
Yeah, that's further to the west as well.
Yeah.
Another couple blocks.
Mm-hmm. Great. It would be great to get a connection up to Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, of all of them, this is probably the one that would be the greatest if we could get sort of our best case scenario.
Because right now there's a huge drop off.
It's probably 20 to 25 feet from West Main down to Page Street.
It's a basketball court with a staircase.
Mm-hmm.
You're going down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Currently, we have a lot of erosion issues from those parking lots down into the back of our unit, so we'll be looking to address a number of things by redeveloping this site.
How many owners are there on the West Main property? Is it one owner that you need?
Three, I think.
I was going to say at least two.
Mr. Capshaw owns the parking lot further to the east, and then I'm not sure who the two owners are, the two car repair places. But yeah, a total of three. Nice, okay. The other thing we'd be looking to do is West Haven currently has a community center and a nursing clinic all the way on the east side down here. And so one of the things we've been hearing from all of our neighborhoods is that the community centers need to be more centrally located within each neighborhood to maximize more use. So we are very encouraged by the idea of bringing that more front and center, making it a greater community resource. There's some talk of moving our offices to West Haven to have a greater presence on the site as well. So that community center could become even more multi-purpose.
Is this a complete redevelopment using your terminology, tear down and rebuild?
Yes. I think three phases is what they envision it would be. Two phases on the lower sort of land that we already own, and then moving our way towards Main Street in the third phase. And so one of the things that came back from the discussions that we had about the draft was, why would you only build 180 units on 10 acres, not too far from downtown? So one of the comments from our board and redevelopment committee were, let's push the density a little further and see what we come up with. So the next drawing that we're going to show you is just that. So this is the higher density option that we have for West Haven. This is 255 families living on it. You'll see still property up on the West Main for acquisition. Basically, a lot of the buildings that were in the previous slide have either become multifamily bar buildings from duplexes, and then the buildings that were bar buildings before now have another story added on top of them. So overall layout of the neighborhood is similar, still punching up to Main Street, still an east-west connection from 10th Street down to 8th Street. 10th Street down to 8th Street, where Hardy Drive runs similarly now.
Is that going through? Doesn't look like it is over there. Or?
Over here?
Uh-huh.
It should connect over to 8th. Okay. I think they just didn't finish it on the aerial.
And in terms of unit entrances, would that change with this? Would they still be, unit entrances would be from the outside, or would they be off? Would you be going to hallways or to interior?
We're
going to
try and keep as many of them entrance from the outside as possible, so that everybody that has a front door now will have a front door. We really like the individual entryways.
So what are the number of stories in the various buildings? We're seeing?
Jason, I knew you were going to ask me that. Can I email them to you tomorrow? Because
one of the questions we had when we looked at these. We did recently get
one sheet of paper I didn't bring.
Those were the Monopoly pieces they had made.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm trying to find out. I have a long-standing argument with how many stories is a Monopoly got. So she's about to answer it.
It's how we want to be.
If I could say off the record, my recollection would be that most of the units down here are going to be 2 to 3 stories. Mm-hmm. And then as we get closer to Main Street, I believe these buildings are going to be either 4 or 5 stories. So trying to keep as... No?
No, I was saying, it looks that way, and that would be consistent with sort of the vision of West Main Street, 4 to 5 stories. I mean, there are minimum. While most of our residential zones do not have a minimum height, West Main Street does have a minimum and maximum building height.
Okay. And then also keeps the units that are closer to the 10th and Page neighborhood on somewhat more of a neighborhood scale, which has been a concern of the 10th and Page neighbors.
How many units are there right now?
126.
So your one plan goes to 180, mm-hmm, and then this one goes to
255.
And why would you want to go to 255?
Intensity, John.
Well, no, I'm just thinking in terms of...
I personally do not want to go to 255.
When you're talking about low-income housing, I thought part of the idea was to, you know, help people, you know, be dispersed within their communities rather mm-hmm. than putting them all in the same location, which 255 would seem to...
Well, again, it's not 255 of just public housing families. There will be...
This will be mixed use?
There will be mixed income... within the neighborhood, so it won't be...
And what kind of percentages are you talking about?
We are talking... So right now we have 126 public housing families. We'd be looking at 100 public housing families, 80 tax credit families, and 75 market rate families. So trying to get as close to... The research that we've done shows as close to a third, a third, a third of a breakdown between the different unit types in a neighborhood is a pretty sustainable model. Unfortunately, because we have 376 units of public housing, that puts us close to 1,200 units if we were actually going to do a third, a third, a third. And we don't feel that that's a responsible thing to do with our land. There are some on our committee that would argue otherwise, that, you know, we couldn't build densely enough on the land that we own. But we're trying to be as respectful and responsible of the residents' wishes as well. And they, you know, 255 families does also feel like a lot to them, mm-hmm. too. So, mm-hmm. again, the density, some of the neighborhoods we're going to look at tonight, the densities are still to be determined in terms of the final scheme. But because of where the land is located, because of how suburban it's laid out right now, the board just said, you know, run us a scheme that has a much, much higher density on it than what we have. So it's close.
25 units an acre is not high density, if you think about it at all.
It's high for us, but it's not high. And
it's high for a residential neighborhood, but in an overall scheme of doing density, that's not high at all.
Right.
Was that a consistent sense that you have from the residents, is that they would rather keep the density down? Is that consistent across the community, whether the residents are living currently in a high-density facility or not?
Many residents, I don't want to say many. There are definitely a mixture of opinions. Some residents would like to keep their neighborhoods very similar to what they are now, just improve the units, whether that's through rehab or just complete redevelopment. And then there are some residents that are more comfortable with the idea of adding families to their neighborhood. And so we sort of have a spectrum of folks that were or that have offered opinions so far. We just got these, I think, about 10 days ago, so we haven't had a chance to run these by the residents yet, but we're in the process of putting together that outreach plan. So we'll soon be able to tell you what the residents think of 255 families at West Haven.
Is this contemplating any structure parking, or is it all...
No structure parking. And no steel construction. Those are two cost factors that the consultant team thought would be too cost prohibitive for us to embark upon. So that's sort of giving us a ceiling of what density we could be building to.
Two questions. One, was there any consideration given to trying to acquire the homes along Page Street there? It's too expensive. Not
where are they? Not really. We haven't really looked at doing that. I think when we started to talk about acquisitions, we've been pushed sort of to look at sort of non-low-income neighborhoods, other places that we could maybe expand and deconcentrate that way, rather than sort of further pulling in from where we are. So no, we haven't really. I know that there's a couple homes that's actually on 8th Street, I believe, that are for sale right now, that we sort of briefly looked at, but not any more of those that, you know, are long behind.
Yeah, and I guess it is a bit of a leading question, because conceptually what troubles me, I like both of these plans well enough. Conceptually what bothers me is that there's not enough punching through. You know, the best redevelopment of any housing authority community that I've seen in the country is at New Columbia in Portland, that had three entrances in a community of 400 units, and they grew to 600, 700 units or so, and created 15 entrances, and actually reconnected this neighborhood with the grid.
Right.
And what you saw was improved redevelopment in both directions. Once you took away that island effect, you started to see some of the design principles that were excellent in the Columbia filtering out into the neighborhood, so it improved the neighborhood outside it as well. And it's almost seamless, the transition between the two. This still reads like a suburban island to me, even though it's better. You know, the punching through to West Main is absolutely an improvement. And I agree with Nick that that the density or the height and the massing along West Main is much more what our ordinance contemplates. So I like that. But if there were any way, even through some limited acquisition, to create even more porosity through the site and to create some sort of grid that helps this neighborhood become absorbed into the greater 10th and Page neighborhood, that would be a huge benefit to the entire community, I would think, and perhaps open up more opportunities for for density on a human scale as well. If you have more gridded roads, you have more opportunities for things like typologies like row houses and flat and walk-ups and things like that.
Yeah, this arc is still something very different in that area. Mm-hmm. I agree. To mesh with plans, overall city vision for the area, you know, it needs a little nudging.
It might be that some acquisition costs are end up washing through the pro forma as you create more lots for redevelopment. So
it did punch through Run Street, which is it's right. On the left-hand side. Right. They did punch, so they did, you know, they are starting to get there because they did two new entrances. Because right now that's
No, which is good, if this were punched through, if those two found their way through, then you're starting to find ways to create that connection to the community. And I don't know what all's involved. I don't know who the property owners are. I don't know what the parcel, what it would cost to...
Big Al's right there.
But on the back side.
My other question was what are your parking metrics? What are you assuming per unit? One parking spot per unit, 1.5, what in general? Or is there a metric that WRT is using?
They are using, I think, whatever is in our zoning ordinance right now for number of bedrooms, because that's what we sent them when we started. So you could probably quote that better than I.
One space for two. Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a multifamily, but it's doesn't a three-bedroom require two spaces? Or
right. Four-bedroom is two.
That's not right. I mean, I would... My own personal opinion, this isn't expressing the will of the Planning Commission, but as one planning commissioner, is to push the envelope on that, that especially in affordable housing communities, I think study after study has shown that the proper ratio is more one-to-one because there are fewer cars, especially if you're building in an urban environment near public transportation. So, but that's a way to achieve greater density and also keep a human scale by eliminating some of the parking. I'm all for it. Mm-hmm.
I just want to underline what Dan, I thought your point was great about punching the streets through and trying to strengthen the grid, because it's an opportunity to do that. It's a really nice point.
At one of the meetings that I attended, Amy shared some resident sampling that she did of opinions, and I found it really interesting. I thought she did a good job. In fact, I encouraged her to publish it. But I thought that some of the findings were a little bit startling and surprising in terms of a preference for lower density, lower scale, very strong opinions about parking and trash removal. And it was the kind of thing I would love to see it in different neighborhoods and across the city, because we're all talking about our shared vision, and I wonder how shared it is and how hard it is for you to... I mean, we're pushing you. We'd like to see greater density, and we'd like to see more height and more creativity, and I think that flies in the face of a lot of what you were getting from your residents. So I just... Mm-hmm.
Amy's correct. I mean, residents were sort of all over the board on a lot of things, but they were pretty consistent. Playgrounds, we heard, everybody wanted playgrounds on their site. Not close, but on their site. And not wanting people living over top was another one we heard pretty much universally throughout, no matter what site we were on, except for Crescent Halls. But they did not want... they didn't want to be over top of another family. They didn't want another family over top.
It didn't want hall. I remember it didn't want corridors. Yeah. Very resistant to resistance.
Safety is a big
hallways.
Big conversation topic.
Yeah. Are you having this kind of a general question? But as you're talking about mixed use and mixed housing and all, are you talking with it sounded like you were with the school system a little bit about possibly doing redistricting or whatever, because West Haven is actually within a very walkable distance to Venable School. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have that kind of mixed housing and all in there, it would seem to me that that would be a logical, a logical time to make some of those changes. Mm-hmm. Just kind of curious if that's come up at all.
Redistricting has not come up at all in the conversation with the schools. Yeah, you know, possibly, because we haven't asked, but it's definitely come up conversationally that our children at West Haven are shipped all the way over to Burley-Moran.
Right.
And, you know, you can throw a stone and hit Venable School from the far west side of the neighborhood. So the point has been noted in a number of meetings, but we have not approached that.
You're talking about connectivity and all like that. I mean, just, you know, improving the walkability to schools and stuff and all would be a wonderful opportunity to get more people on the streets and walking back and forth to school and taking advantage of what's in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing is they're pushing us to sort of push the density envelope and bring in more mixed income and higher, not just a tax credit level of mixed income. I don't think we've taken a stance and started really pushing back at redistricting, but some of our committee members have definitely sort of said, okay, that's not necessarily the housing authority's responsibility, maybe. But it's just been
I'm just curious. Sort of,
we certainly haven't gotten in the middle of that one. So.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't throw
yourself under
that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
What you guys are providing, you know, in this concept and the others will definitely be a good argument in any discussion that occurs with that.
Right. In the future.
Yes. At some point in time by the proper group.
Right. Well, the good news so far with the schools is that they've been very forthcoming with all their data, so we know exactly how many kids from each of our neighborhoods go to each of their schools. We'll be able to track, you know, middle school, you know, if there's a bubble headed towards middle school, a bubble headed towards high school, that type of thing. So we're starting to quantify a lot of anecdotal data through the help of the schools and their administration. So I think we're sort of coming on each other's radar at a good time, early enough in the conversation that we could address issues like that as we move forward. And thankfully, West Haven won't be one of the first couple neighborhoods that we do, so hopefully some of those will be worked out as we get into the heavy-duty children neighborhoods. Next is our South First Street neighborhood, which I apologize for the sort of wonky orientation of the drawing. I did that because of the next drawing that I'm going to show you. South First Street is our largest site land-wise. We have 12 and a quarter acres here, including this large parcel that runs from Elliott Avenue. This is South First Street all the way down to Langford. Mm-hmm. And then we have this little sneaky parcel. It's over here. It's all woods right now. This is the Mount Zion First Baptist Church on the corner for orientation purposes. And then Belmont heads over this way. So right now we have 58 families living on 12 and a quarter acres, largely in two-story townhomes. And this first scenario that you're seeing in the draft has 98 families, 50 public housing, and 40 tax credit. And then this little swatch down here, they have those slated as 8 homeownership units for our families, if we find 8 families that are wanting to be homeowners. And so in all the scenarios that we've seen, those are all homeownership units going forward. Green space in the center. We have an existing community center here now, and our maintenance shop and maintenance office sit there. So we'll be looking to keep that somewhat centrally located if possible. And for those of you that are more familiar with the site, down here there's a baseball diamond and sort of a huge just open area right now that is fairly underutilized. So we'd be looking to shift the green space closer to the center and build housing units down to the right-hand side. This was another area where the board and the committee and the community said, you know, not enough density here. Let's, you know, up it up another level. So then we came back with this one in this scenario. Again, a lot of the duplexes that you see here turn into bar buildings, and the existing bar buildings get another story added to them. Mm-hmm. So this is 116 units, which has 40 public housing, 36 tax credit, and 32 market rate. And then they forgot to turn the layer back on with the homeownership. So those 8 units are still there. We just don't have them in this picture to show you.
In this plan, do they still show those as only 8 units?
Yes.
Is that topographical challenges?
Or? I think, and just the parcel itself is not very large. The rear of that parcel backs up onto a creek, so I think our rear yards are limiting what we're able to do there.
I do have a question of how you relate to Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned recreational space. And
green space here. Do you totally manage your own recreational space, or do you work with the city?
We do right now. We manage, and please correct me if I'm wrong, we manage all of our own green space right now. Fortunately, Parks and Rec has been very anxious to be part of the process as well. So we've been having some ongoing discussions about, especially at South First Street, about connecting into the existing trail network along throughout the city and trying to figure out ways to not be as duplicative with our green space in areas of the city that already have existing city parks nearby. So possibly doing something different with our green space or their green space so that we don't have two parks competing for the same people in close proximity. So I see that being streamlined as we go forward.
Dan and I have been talking about the need for smaller urban play courts, and I wonder in your development schemes if that might be something that you could pursue.
We could certainly look into it, sure. With all of the drawings that you're seeing tonight, everything is very conceptual, so it's more just sort of a, for lack of a better word, just a green blob to hold place for green space. So there's nothing sure. saying that we couldn't have further conversation about, you know, splitting them up into smaller mm-hmm. ones or relocating them or that type of thing as we go forward.
Thank you for bringing that up. I mean, that's like to express at least two members of the planning commission's desire that these green spaces be conceptualized as urban spaces, which doesn't preclude the possibility of active use. I know from sitting on the Parks and Recs Advisory Council that it's very frustrating to me that when you say active use, people say, well, we can't do that because you don't have 120 by 65 yards mm-hmm. there. But urban active use spaces tend to take the size and shape of a basketball court and hockey fields or some little mini soccer fields, and they're self-contained spaces that allow you to have passive use around them as well.
What's the nature of the character of the trail envisioned along the creek as it connects over to Elliott? Would it connect to Elliott?
Yes. It would connect to Elliott. It would cross Elliott. And then our 6th Street, I think right. There's a little light here, 6th Street. Mm-hmm. So our 6th Street site sits here. Mm-hmm. Then if you make a left on Monticello, our Crescent Hall site sits here. Mm-hmm. So there's some talk of sort of weaving that trail through all of our sites to, not necessarily just our sites, Ick's property is over here as well. So there's some talk of using that trail to tie together a number of properties that could potentially be redeveloped in the not-too-distant future.
It's not really a reflection here, because that says trail along Creek, but we also talked about some kind of a footbridge or some kind of connection across mm-hmm. to connect to the Belmont neighborhood. Because right now a lot of there's a lot of traffic down through the woods, across the little creek, and back up the other side. Just people go back and forth mm-hmm. all the time, but it's not laid out that way. It's not lit. So.
And a lot of them are coming from Belmont to catch the bus on South First Street right here. So mm-hmm. giving
we have a fence
access
along the back side of our property right now, but at the very end, close to where the sort of softball field. There's a gate, but there's a lot of traffic back and forth.
And what does that creek intermittent runs all? I mean, what is the creek? Is it a real creek? Is it a little wash? Because I can ask the same question about this that I asked about West Haven. Was there any contemplation to extending the Belmont grid through this property?
I don't know what you mean by real creek. I mean, it's
something that could be, can you build a road over it, basically, without doing environmental damage to the creek? Is it a running creek?
It looks like it gets real steep as it goes down to the creek.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It jumps off.
Maybe it's a design thing, but the roadway that loops around each kind of pod. It'll be interesting to see what the final design of that is in terms of being able to either connect people to that green space or separate them. I think it's a difficult thing to work out. Mm-hmm. There's a redundancy on that looping road and the looping interior parking lot road mm-hmm. that both of it creates an island for the people that live between the parking lot and the road. Mm-hmm. And if somehow those can be more efficiently laid out, then it might allow access to the green space to be easier and more pedestrian friendly all along its length, mm-hmm. instead of kind of cut off by cars.
Mm-hmm. And police and fire have also been meeting with us, and they also have concerns about the way these are laid out right now. Mm-hmm. We'd be looking to incorporate their concerns, both from just a monitoring standpoint as well as access to the backsides of the units that are more on the parking lot side than on that drive side. So
these units, as they're drawn, this is, I guess, more detail than we need to get, but are they two-sided? Do they back up to a party wall between them, you know, units facing out, or is it a through unit?
It's a through unit.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cause, and that's how they all are now. They're just in bars that are through units right now. So that's South First Street. In the interest of time, I'm just going to try and keep us moving a little bit. Sixth Street is the other one that we're probably going to spend just a few minutes talking about. Currently have 25 families on a little over 7.25 acres. So again, a very suburban parcel right downtown. Monticello Avenue, 6th Street. So we were just down here on South First. The Frank X building is immediately to our west. Our Crescent Halls property is up here, just on the other side of Frank X. So the scheme we're seeing right now in the draft has 40 units on it, all public housing. Got a little bit of pushback from the schools on that because it is also in the Clark School District. So they said we'd like to see some mixed income on this site, not just public housing. Also got pushback from the board and the committee saying, you know, you're not going to find a more prime piece of real estate. Why are we only putting 40 families there? So we had WRT do another drawing as well. And so that's what this one looks like. So now you're looking at 108 families. So 5.5 times greater than what lives there now. And this is one neighborhood where staff anticipates feeling a lot of pushback from the residents that live there, if for no other reason than just a tremendously large increase, potentially, in the number of families. And this scheme has, again, 40 public housing units, 36 tax credit, and 32 market rate. And I'm happy to send around the breakdowns of the unit counts for anybody that wants them in case those are of interest later. But I don't have a whole lot to say about this scheme. I'm not terribly crazy about it personally, but
plaza deck built over parking.
Yeah,
we're not sure.
So yeah, there's a surface parking lot. No, I can tell you.
Oh, okay.
Not excited about it. Sorry. So there's a surface parking lot here. There's a similar surface parking lot on this side because, as Missy asked before, we're trying to stay away from structured parking.
Yeah.
On this side, they built. So if you head down Water Street and in front of LexisNexis, there's that parking deck that has a parking lot on the second story, and then there's the underground parking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So imagine turning that top level of parking into almost like a green roof that can be walked on and played on and recreated on. And that's sort of what they're doing here. So there'd be parking underneath that.
Architecture school project.
Very popular at architecture.
And like the holes.
Capitol Hall and JPA over there.
Yeah, all the space on top. Yeah.
Right under the bridge.
Yeah.
And yes, that's so another very good example.
The holes for ventilation?
The holes are for ventilation and for light.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, they're actually, so they are holes.
Yeah.
That's what you're
meaning. Yeah. And they're conceptual. Conceptual as well.
Okay.
No, there will be no fireman's poles because I have a lot of kids that live there. And I said, you got to give me something around the holes because I can't have kids seeing if they can jump across them, through them, in them, et cetera, et cetera. So
I got the concept, except for the holes.
Yeah,
the holes
conceptually, they're just there to show that you would be able to see. And
that it would be a cool design.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Now we get this little, you know, plaza in the middle that, I don't know, I'm just not a big fan of this one.
Yeah.
But,
I'd like to see a movie away from the townhouses that I saw in an earlier meeting, but I just don't think this is it.
No. But, you know, with deference to them, we did ask them to just put as many families as they could. So that's what they did. So we have, you know, community center space, office space, as you move, and higher density, obviously, as you move towards Monticello. And as I said, this one will be mixed income as well, so it won't just be public housing families anymore. And I imagine that this scenario will look very different before it comes to you in site plan phase as well.
Yeah, one of the things that concerns me a little bit relates back to Kurt's question about
whether these are passed through units or not. I mean, if these things really, say, look at the row of townhouses on the bottom, for example. If mm-hmm. that really is, I'm not talking about, I know this is very conceptual, but this becomes a typology that this gets adopted across all of the sites, and so you end up with a lot of these with a parking, an internal parking lot, mm-hmm. and a sort of yeah. fake outside where there's no real use of it, or it turns its back to the street. So you might end up with back decks there, but there's no real pedestrian orientation. There's no real life there. I think you've created pockets in the neighborhood that don't relate to the street, and I'd hate to see that become kind of, oh yeah, let's pop down a few of these at South First. Let's pop down a few of these at West Haven, because I hate the type.
It's still very monopoly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how it feels to me. Yeah. And I'd like us to get away from monopoly as much as possible. Yeah.
And it's so very different from the adjacent Belmont development pattern. So mm-hmm. it's still this mm-hmm. is the neighborhood, this is the project.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So anyway, that's 6th Street. I'm going to keep us moving. I've got a few other ones I want you to see. Mickey Drive, up on the north side of town, Mr. Rogers Whole Foods project. It's immediately...
My legacy.
So it's immediately adjacent across this beautiful 25-foot retaining wall. Hydraulic Road here. Region 10 has offices down here on the corner. Currently, we have 23 families on almost 2 acres. The draft plan that you're seeing now is 26 units, so we'd be just adding... This is one of the rehab with infill options. We could either demolish all the units and build them back in a similar configuration to how they are now to do redevelopment, or we could just rehab interior and exterior, and then we'd be adding a unit on each end and a unit here to just bring us up to 26. And then adding a community center over here that is not there now. This is one area that I think we might get into a little bit more. Mickey Drive sits in the Greenbrier School District, which is not heavily populated right now with low-income children. So if we did have a neighborhood where we could push the envelope on diversifying that school's portfolio, this would be the school district to do it in. So we may see this scheme change a little bit in a mixed-income setting as we move forward. Right now, these are all still public housing units. So more to come on Mickey Drive, but right now we're looking at 26 units, all public housing. Again, police and fire have issues with the big communal parking lot, so they might be changing. But right now, this was the favorite of everything that we had seen so far. Madison Avenue, we have 18 families on close to 4 acres right now. They sit in duplexes that look very similar to this on the north side of the street in the Venable School District. And so what we're proposing at Madison Avenue is to, right now the street just sort of dies here, so we'd be looking to extend the cul-de-sac a little bit, move the road a little bit further to the north, and that way we could build a second row of duplexes on this side. So the scheme you're looking at here has 46 families in it. And that would be a mixture of... tax credit and public housing and possibly some market rate as well, with the addition of the community center on site, which we do not have right now. The residents that live at Madison Avenue, I think, are a little anxious because of the tremendous amount of increase, but the fact that they live in duplexes now and we're proposing more duplexes, I think, makes them feel a little more comfortable. We anticipate a little bit of pushback from our families on Amherst Street up here.
Over here, more so.
Yeah. Oh, and then and there's the $400,000 homes down here.
Buy one of those and put about 14 apartments in there.
We could. And then we're working with Parks and Rec on the west side of the site to improve the trail connections that are over here down into the park and the school fields. Since we have a staircase now there, but it needs lighting and a little more safety improvements to it. So that's Madison Avenue. And then finally,
just a question on that. To continue the theme that Dan has raised a couple of times, is the topography just way too difficult to connect at the end of Madison toward Preston?
To connect the street
to the
through?
Other part of Madison?
You mean extend the road all the way through?
Extend, yeah.
There's people that live there. Yeah. There would are have some to, topography issues.
It would do a bit of a jog.
It would jog to the park, right? I mean, to the Am I looking at the same place?
Yeah, there's to jog to the park to that access road. You gotta go over a creek to do that.
You do. Mm-hmm.
But that has been talked about. It's not been shown in any of the schemes, but the city administration has also talked to us about, you know, what would it take to make that happen. So, not beyond the realm of possibility.
Do you have the overhead? Oh yeah. So good.
Because you know Madison comes down the other side.
Right.
Preston as well. Mm-hmm. The other part of Madison.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then gets, you know, dissected.
That makes sense. What you're looking
at. It does. Like that does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Google Maps thinks there's a road there. trampling over houses.
Right. Which is
exactly what it would have to do.
Yes.
And there's some pretty serious topography between this side of our houses and the park, as well as you move closer to the parking lot down here. So I'm not sure what kind of engineering would have to happen, but
yeah, I remember it being really steep. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on Madison?
Thank you.
Sure. Last but not least, Riverside Avenue. Riverside, we currently have 16 units. We have 8 duplexes right now that front on Riverside Avenue. For orientation purposes, Market Street is down towards the bottom of the screen. This is another hypothetical property acquisition. There's this beautiful, large, multi-acre parcel that's completely vacant that sits behind our land. And we have, again, not approached the property owners about what their plans are for that land. So this is purely hypothetical at this point. But we would love to be able to expand beyond just the straight line of duplexes right now if we could. We have 4 duplexes right now, a little playground in the middle, and then 4 to the north. And then the church and its parking lot sit up here at the top of your screen. Mm. Largely a duplex street right now on both sides of the street all the way up. You have the newer development down here. One is River Bluff and one is River...
River Bluff is up at the other end.
At the other end of the cul-de-sac up here.
River
and
View?
River's Edge.
River's Edge,
yes.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, 2 more affluent neighborhoods that bookend what is largely otherwise a duplex centric street, and then we'd be looking to add a community center and then centralize the green space a little bit more as well, and this would be a mix of public housing and tax credit units too for a total of 25 families.
Is this parkland going, I don't have a point in the right direction.
This is parkland. This is a city park down here. There is an informal just sort of cow path, for lack of a better word, that gets you from one place to the other, but it's not a formal connection right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those are the Hayes Ewing lots right across the street, right? Or where does the development end?
Which development? Where do we end?
We're right here. Yeah.
Oh, the Habitat Homes?
Yeah, well,
there's some more in this area right here.
But there are another, aren't there? The Habitat Homes, the last one in that development, or are they the second last one?
I'm not sure. I think in my mind they're all Habitat Homes.
Those are the line of, houses that are, modern architecture.
It's a little subdivision designed by Hayes Ewing.
That's not part of the other.
Pardon?
It's not part of the other, mm-hmm. up on the other, yeah. upper side.
No. Someone asked about that land there, but I thought that was all part of the...
Okay, so I think it's been built upon right now.
I
didn't know if that was a lot or not.
So that looks like it connects to the park.
Okay. Any other questions on Riverside? If not, I'd like to just wrap up. As I mentioned earlier, our redevelopment committee is similar to your planning commission in terms of being an advisory body, and just some highlights of what they've been talking about for the past 2 years, adding mixed-use space to as many sites as possible where zoning permits, adding mixed income to not just public housing in as many neighborhoods as possible, increasing the access to jobs and training opportunities for our residents even before construction starts to get as many of our residents prepped for those construction jobs when they come along, looking at the city from a larger economic development perspective in terms of things like acquisition and land swaps and better connecting to resources, furthering the commitment to the Bill of Rights, making sure that stays the same. We may forever be discussing what the appropriate level of density is as we go on, and that leads to the last bullet, which is from the past couple meetings of how, you know, when we set out 2 years ago, we had no idea how large the conversation was going to be by the time we were done, and we are excited about that and thankful for that. at the same time, we've realized that what we're trying to do is so much bigger than just the Housing Authority. And so we've been very thankful for all the partners that have stepped up so far to be part of the conversation, including the Planning Commission. And we see the final master plan as being sort of our new ground zero for where we'll jump off from for future conversations. So it is by no means the end. It's just sort of our new beginning of where we'll jump off from for future conversations. Community meetings. We have had close to 100 meetings so far, believe it or not, in the past 18 months. And these are just the ones that we can remember of the groups and the staff and the community members and community representatives that have been a part of our process so far. And so, again, we just wanted to let you guys know that the Charlottesville community has been very active so far, and we look forward to growing this list as we move forward. It's pretty impressive. That's my favorite slide, I think, in the whole presentation. And finally, we'd be remiss to think that just making physical changes to our buildings would do but so much in the improving the lives of the residents that we currently serve. And so in addition to the physical changes, we'll be looking to improve the level of service provided on site, as well as connecting our residents to services that exist elsewhere in the community. We are very nonprofit rich in our community and service provider rich. So just trying to break down some of the barriers that exist between our families and those resources without duplicating their efforts, including education, access to jobs, transportation and childcare. And so the largest thing that we're doing physically right now will be to add space for those providers to all of our sites so that they can come meet the residents more so where they are, as opposed to residents having to either hop in a car, hop on a bus with their kids and with, you know, a pile of other things with them, to try and make that a little more reciprocal in terms of access. And so we're looking at a couple different models right now. We've been working with some planning and sociology students at UVA. They've been doing some case study research for us. One of the members of the consultant team has been doing some research for us as well. So those conversations will be ongoing even after the master plan finishes, to figure out what the best way to get those connections is. And finally, I promise this is the actual last slide. Next steps. What happens after we finish the master plan? I have no idea. I get to take a vacation. We will be wrapping up the master plan with the consultants in the next, I'd say, 6 to 8 weeks or so at the most. After that, we see ourselves shopping around the final plan to continue gaining community support for it, folks that are just starting to come to the table at the end, having similar conversations to get them brought up to speed. We've started researching the relocation process and what our obligations to our families are, as well as different funding sources that are available to make implementation happen. We're working on a couple new RFPs for Levy Avenue and for Crescent Halls. Those are currently our first two phases to be queued up for implementation. And we'll continue to report back to community partners as we advance in the process, whether that be through work sessions or at your regular monthly meetings. We would love to keep you guys abreast of everything that we have going on. Sorry that it took a lot longer than I thought it was going to.
Are you all thinking about ordinance changes that you'd like to see happen prior to redevelopment that might help with redevelopment, things that are code doesn't contemplate, for example? I know I've seen examples where public housing authorities have worked with planning commissions to create things like a section under the code where you can have a village green, which reduces frontage requirements, so you can get more units around a village green that didn't exist in the code before. That was true in that was true in Portland as well. And so I'd love for you all to come back to us with ordinance changes that might help you redevelop the way you'd like to redevelop.
I have a follow-up question to that that's very similar, which was, do you have a sense of how many of the, and I realize these are master plans, how many of those plans would be by right, would require PUDs or rezoning or special use permits?
Most of them are by right now, actually, with the densities that are proposed. And I think we did that just from an administrative, sort of give us the simplest way through the city approval process.
Was that a dictate that you had given to mm-hmm. WRT?
We gave them a chart showing what the existing zoning was, and what the existing by right densities were. Some of them may, some of the newer, the three higher density ones may not be by right anymore. I should amend that. But most of the rest of them in the draft plan are by right. We're not looking to be exclusively by right, but that just seemed the simplest jumping off point for us in the get-go.
And just to correct my memory, this is an easy question, but you said you owned about 10 acres?
40 acres.
40.
Mm-hmm.
10 is West Haven.
10 is West Haven alone. Yep.
Mm-hmm. 40 under one ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would certainly hate for the code to cripple your process. I think tonight I've heard people greater density and greater neighborhood fabric and working with the existing grid and spatial organization. And I would certainly like to see you be as creative as you needed to be and feel, at least speaking for myself, that I would want to see some code changes to let you do that rather than go with what seemed to be the easy, expedient project mm-hmm. that could be approved because it's by right. Because mm-hmm. these are some of the major opportunities that we're going to have for redevelopment. And this has been a critical and underserved population that's been, you know, historically not had the design attention perhaps that it warranted over time. And this would be an opportunity to remedy that.
And it does seem... of course, like Dan, I can't speak for all my colleagues as commissioners, but I do think the commission has certainly heard a lot more zoning text amendment in the past year than in the 2 years prior that I'm familiar with. And I don't, some portion of those, it'd be hard to characterize how many of them have been motivated by individual applicants wanting to do something that, when in the instances where the Planning Commission has initiated the zoning text amendment and has also then made a recommendation to council to make a change in the zoning code, have been instances where applicants have felt like they wanted to do something. Planning Commission and City Council agree it seems like a good thing to do, and it seems crazy that our code is standing in the way.
Okay.
And I think that has been, for me at least as a commissioner, a change in the pattern of how I've experienced being a commissioner and how the commission has worked in relation to applications, and I think that's a good thing that we're trying to be responsive, of course maintaining our attention to the public interest, but mm-hmm. recognizing that codes need to change as times change.
And I think that's a great show of support from this body already, that you'd encourage us to bring those changes before you instead of, you know, encouraging us to work with what's given already. So thank you for that. We look forward to wrapping our minds around what those changes might be, because I can tell you we haven't thought about them yet. But
and will the master plan include a timeline for implementation, at least schematically, or has that been identified? Or what we saw right now, are we looking at a 20-year plan, or is it a, you know, five-year plan?
Right now, I think we're looking at least a year per phase. So
each phase being a site?
Each phase being a site, right? And some sites, the larger sites, have multiple phases. So West Haven has three or four phases. South First Street is two phases. So probably
some are running concurrently or consecutively?
Construction-wise, probably not running concurrently unless we grow our staff tremendously. But happening concurrently in, you know, RFP for designing one, relocating another,
sure.
demolishing. So I see them running concurrently in that regard, but not... Mm-hmm. full-blown construction on.
And there's more to the...
And money. That's going to be huge.
10 to 20 year time frame and then 5.
Mm-hmm.
No way 5.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
It's going to happen that fast.
This took us 2 years, we'll just say that.
No,
yeah.
To get to where we are.
A
I say there's normal years and there's housing in 40 years. Or HUD years.
Yeah, HUD years is a good way to say.
Dog years.
Do you have any plan with the residents and the housing? I mean, is some of it to also help people move into other than public housing?
Yes, sir.
I mean, it seems like an opportunity, you know, from the social side of it, to really address, you know, this whole thing about, you know, connecting the neighborhoods, the integration with the existing neighborhoods and mm-hmm. bringing those neighborhoods into there, but at the same time helping people move from the public housing sector into owning their own homes, working with Habitat, working mm-hmm. with the other organizations, and not leaving people feeling so isolated.
Yes, that's definitely...
And I guess that's a separate part of, I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with the building and all like that, but that whole conversation seems to be critical with the rest of the community mm-hmm. as well. And I don't know when that will happen.
It's already begun. Okay. I think we have a number of families on Dan's list at Habitat to get on the waiting list to get into Habitat. So we have families that are eager and anxious to get out of public housing. The stock, unfortunately, is not meeting their needs. So we see redevelopment and the supplementing of our public housing with other types of housing units as a way to help augment them sort of stepping up and out of public housing into.
And did I hear you right in the beginning? You're not really talking about increasing the stock of the number of public housing units as you are. If you're increasing density, you're increasing
the total number of total units number on our sites.
And all, mm-hmm. Which would also seem to be, like at the West Haven site, again, really important to incorporate them into the fabric of everything else over there.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think HUD would let us increase public housing. They're not looking to be in the market of growing public housing stock right now.
Is that right?
Yep.
Given our deficit of 1,000 units or so in the city.
Yep.
And you mentioned land swaps at some point. Was that with private landowners or... Did you mention land swaps, or did I just hear that?
I may have mentioned it. We don't have any plan at the current time, but certainly if there were parcels adjacent or in other neighborhoods that would help support the project, we'd be happy to have those conversations. But right now, the only ones that are proposed right now are all hypothetical.
I see.
Yeah, I think we're looking at more acquisition than swap.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Yeah, wonderful to be here.
Congratulations on what seems to have been a really excellent process.
Thank you.
I hope you get a vacation.
I'm going with Anthony.
Is that awesome?
Go eat her and like some bottle or something.
Yeah.
It'll be a vacation for me. This is yours.